This is The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And I'm your host, Julian Joiello, and with me, of course, your host, Ben Starr.
Hey, Julian, good to be back. You know, as your listeners heard over the last break, this is the last week of our regularly scheduled programming. Next week, we'll begin the WBAI Fund Drive, and we will be raising funds like there's no tomorrow. Like there's no tomorrow. That's always struck me as a interesting figure of speech, Julian.
Yeah,
where does that come out of? Where does that come from, like there's no tomorrow?
Like there's no tomorrow, I mean, well, doomsday, right?
What would you do if there was no tomorrow? What
would
you do today, right now, if you knew that tomorrow there would be nothing? There would be no world. No people.
I definitely wouldn't go to the gym.
Well, there's
a start. That's one of those long planning things. I'd probably call up my family, say goodbye to my best friends, or maybe we all meet up and have a party.
Just a total hedonistic romp.
Yeah, a Day After Tomorrow party. I remember that movie, Day After Tomorrow.
It was a huge box office success, by the way.
One of many movies about the apocalypse. And today we're actually going to be talking about the apocalypse, maybe with quotes on it. Apocalypse.
Yeah, well, specifically the doomsday mentality, because we've heard so many predictions over the last 10, 15, 20
but
centuries.
Yeah, I mean, you can say centuries, thousands and thousands of years, going way, way back, whether it be religious, whether it be philosophers, just saying that, you know, the world is going to end in one way or another, whether it be an ice age, or the Earth explodes, or a meteor, or aliens come and destroy us. There's so many theories. Zombies come alive, and we all die and become zombies, and that's how the world ends.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned The Day After Tomorrow, Julian. That was a very successful film. Actually grossed over $500 million worldwide. And it's one of many films in the last decade or so, along with television shows, books, video games.
Well, yeah, you've got movies like Mad Max, you've got Maze Runner, Insurgent. These are all movies that came out this year. And
yeah, that's just this year.
Huge, huge, huge box office successes. And whether it be a comedy like This Is the End or dramas, there are plenty of people talking and considering what would happen if the doomsday was nigh.
So we see that there's this apocalyptic mentality that's sort of embedded in our popular culture, right? You mentioned Day After Tomorrow. Here's just a few examples, right? You remember that movie 2012? Came out in 2009. It was around the whole phenomenon of 2012, because that was the last major...
Right. One of the biggest, quote-unquote, doomsdays or apocalypses that was going to come that a lot of people really believed in was the end of the Mayan calendar, and that was in 2012. And we all know now we're here in 2015 saying, okay, that never happened.
Yeah, and you know, leading up to that, all the great scholars of Mayan culture said, hey, you know, it's not the end of the Mayan calendar. It's not the end. It's just the completion of a cycle. And yet it got so ramped up in popular culture. And that movie, 2012, actually grossed almost $800 million worldwide. So, and I could tell you a whole bunch of other examples of really big blockbuster movies with apocalyptic end-time themes that did very well, which shows that there's a demand for this kind of theme and this kind of feeling. And Julian, even kids' movies, one of the biggest kids' movies of the last 10 years was WALL-E.
Yeah,
a movie
about
a little
that.
Lonely robot roaming around a post-apocalyptic wasteland. And that was a kid's movie.
Right.
So at all levels, we're sort of jumping into this notion of end of the world, end times, end of the world as we know it, maybe, not the end of the world in a
right.
Total
maybe,
sense.
Maybe an ice age would come along and make everything much more difficult. But we all think about this apocalypse, and I know everybody's, I mean, and in popular culture, as we've been saying, this is something that everyone talks about. And just this Sunday, if anybody witnessed that reddish large moon, the blood moon, that was supposed to be an apocalypse too.
Yeah, that was an eclipse, a full lunar eclipse on the same day as a full moon, and I believe a super moon, as they say. It was actually really beautiful, Julian. I know you didn't get the chance to see it because you were in a...
No, I made it back home in time, and I did get a brief chance, but it was like a glint in the sky. It wasn't quite that huge anymore. But I have seen a lot of amazing photos, and it's really beautiful.
In my neighborhood, people were coming out of their houses and up on fire escapes and rooftops looking up at it. It was unbelievable. But to get back to this notion of end times, right, I think, Julian, there's a romanticism. There's a comfort that people take in looking forward to and believing that there's going to be some sort of collapse or calamity that, you know, signals the end of the world.
Right.
And what I want to know is, why do you think that is? Why do people take comfort in that?
Well, you know, it's like knowing when it's going to end. There's something about not knowing anything, and you want to have, I guess we as humans, or I know I, all the people I know, we take all this chaos that is the earth and humankind, and we try to put it into a sort of place that makes sense for us as human beings. And even though the apocalypse is such an intense idea, to say, okay, well, it's going to happen on this day is something that's like, oh, okay, well, at least there's comfort in knowing when it's going to happen.
Yeah, maybe. So you're saying maybe it's like empowering for people.
It is empowering. It's like, okay, well, I'm a human and I can know when this is all going to happen. And that's what I'm sure a lot of these people who do say that the apocalypse is going to come, they say, okay, well, it's going to happen then. And I have that power now. And there's something we were talking about before about, you know, the fear of death is a big fear for most human beings, just because it's hard to understand. It's complicated. It doesn't really live in our own perception.
I would even say it's probably the foremost existential fear.
Exactly. And there's something that's a part of that, which is a fear of being alone, right? So you're born alone. And you die alone, which is a popular thing to say when thinking about death. And there's something about, I think, for people who look to the apocalypse as almost something exciting, is that the apocalypse represents humankind ending at once, altogether. And all of a sudden, you're not dying alone anymore. There's no potential being lost when you die.
And you're not missing out on anything.
You're not missing out on anything. Instead, everything's ending, and there's nothing left when you're gone. And it makes those people who perhaps would be dying in that apocalypse feel so much more important and connected with the world, in a way.
So there's a psychologist in England at the University of Kent. Her name is Karen Douglas. And she does a lot of research around conspiracy theories, conspiracy theorists. And she found that a lot of conspiracy theorists share a lot of common attributes with people who believe strongly in impending apocalypse or doomsday. She says that there's a feeling of powerlessness there that's connected to a mistrust in authority. And the comfort in subscribing to these ideas or to anticipating such an impending event makes people feel like they have some sort of special knowledge that others do not. And she also found that the people who believe in this the most are also going to be most motivated to broadcast and spread their beliefs, which now in the internet age has become easier than ever, right?
I mean, if you were to look up, I took just a moment to Google apocalypse calendar or apocalypse next apocalypse, and you can find, I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of different web pages, forums of people just talking about, oh, this is the next one that's going to come, or this mega tsunami is going to come and destroy us, or this fireball is going to come down from the sky and destroy all of the East Coast. And there's a lot of that happening everywhere, and you know, you can read about that all over.
Well, the next date, believe it or not, is October 7th, next Wednesday. Next Wednesday has been predicted to be the date of the rapture.
And that's by Chris McCann and the E-Bible Fellowship Group.
Yeah, but get this, Julian. The E-Bible Fellowship is a rebranding of a media radio network that was run by a guy named Harold Camping. He predicted already three different apocalypses. He predicted September 94, May 2011. That was a pretty big one. People were like holding signs everywhere. It was on TV. And then when it didn't happen in May 2011, they said, oh, we meant it's going to happen in October 2011.
Yeah, whoops.
And then he wound up passing away December 2013, and they rebranded the organization. So, guys who have already gone 0-3 in apocalypse predictions are calling next Wednesday, October 7th.
Yeah, and we're telling you to tune in October 7th to our radio program. We'll be here.
I hope we'll be here.
Yeah, I think we'll be here, hopefully, and join us there October 7th. But yeah, that's the next apocalypse, supposedly.
Allegedly. But, you know, over the years, there's been so many predictions from so many various groups, and it's not just a religious thing, and when it is, it's not just a Christian thing. I mean, there are plenty of religious groups from all walks of life and beliefs that have predicted apocalypse. According to the Talmud, that's a Jewish book, that there is a passage that says that in the 33rd century, so like, what is that, 1,300 years from now?
Yeah.
Or 1,200
years from now, yeah.
So in about 1,200 years, according to the Talmud, the world's going to end. Then there are some Muslim scholars who have called for sometime in 2120 to 2129. So about 115 years from now. There's been pretty much every year some group, some individual, even scientifically. I mean, there is a chance that in August 2032, we're going to get smacked with a large asteroid that wipes out all life on Earth. There's a chance. Now, the chance is 0.002%, but it's a real chance.
That is a chance. That is an amount, for sure, but, I mean, very small. I mean, also, California is supposed to break off. I don't know when that was supposed to happen.
Well, that's going to be when the next big earthquake on the San Andreas Fault happens.
Right. So we're talking about all this apocalypse stuff and all these theories that everybody brings up, all the movies that are all about it. But what does that play for you? What have you imagined yourself in the apocalypse, waking up one day, looking out your window and seeing fireballs falling from the sky, or
maybe
nuclear winter?
Yeah, maybe you're a prepper. Maybe your garage is full of MREs. And water filters and gas masks.
Right,
and
you've got those buckets of freeze-dried food and hundreds of days per bucket. You can feed you and your whole family.
Maybe an underground bunker or two.
Yeah, I mean, what does this play in your life? And it does play a large part in many people's lives, waiting for the end or preparing for the end. And a lot of people deal with it in different ways. And again, we know those people who spend the time to prepare for this.
Well, there's sort of two types of doomsday or apocalyptic ideas, right? One is the religious type that says like a judgment day or a rapture is coming, right? And then the other is on a more secular basis, people who are concerned about things like economic collapse, global warming, and you know, a host of other, you know, geopolitical, environmental, and social problems that could create what we'd rather call maybe the end of the world as we know it. But in a sense, isn't it the end of the world as we know it on a regular basis? I mean, you know, we're living in radically evolving, changing times. And I hate to use the buzzword game changer because I feel like it's really overused. But it seems like there's regularly advances in technology and different political events.
Absolutely.
And things that are happening that
advances are advances in war technology too, or biochemical advances. I mean, there is a scare about Ebola becoming an outbreak, disease is a huge. The bird flu, the swine flu.
Yeah, we get one of those every few years.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, and there are threats that come about, and there is a scientific possibility that they could spread and, in fact, destroy a country or humankind as we know it. But this is all change that comes along every year.
So there's a religion professor at Concordia University in Montreal. His name's Lorenzo Di Tommaso, and he's been researching these kind of ideas and groups that believe in a doomsday. And what he's found is that in both the religious and secular ideas of an end-of-world event, what ties the mentality together is this sense that the world's problems are too big to solve, right? He says that our problems have become so big, with no solutions in sight, that we no longer see ourselves able, as human beings, to solve these problems. So, from the biblical point of view, people believe that God is going to solve the problems, right? From the more secular points of view, people believe that it's going to be some sort of catastrophe that hits the reset button that sends us to a different way of life, right? We maybe go back to this more archaic way of life of survival and living off the land. And I think that goes back to the notion of the romanticism of this topic.
Yeah, there's definitely a romanticism of just maybe living on a farm and growing your own food and perhaps hunting your own animals and building your own shelter and finding your own water, and this being a much simpler life. That I know many people, even in America, spend their time going, finding smaller villages in the mountains or farmlands and just trying to live this way and wishing it was that way.
Yeah, I mean, in the last 5 to 10 years, the idea of going off the grid has picked up a lot of steam.
Absolutely.
And there's whole communities based around this. And not just communities, but there's whole industries based around preparing for this kind of cataclysmic event. And that's what we're talking about today. Ben Starr and Julian Gioiello with you on The Positive Mind on WBAI. We're talking about the popularity of doomsday theorists and apocalyptic.
And also what that means as humankind, what the obsession with the apocalypse means to you and to all of us. I actually want to bring a short poem to you all. It's called Letters from the Ice Age. It was actually by an author, Ian Ferrier. He was the winner of Poetry for the End of the World in 2013. This is a contest, I think, in California, where several dozen poets sent in poems, and or I don't know how many poets, but six of them won. And we have this one poem about the Ice Age, which I wanted to bring you. And then after this, we're going to take some calls from you at 212-757-5555 on the subject. So here's this Letters from the Ice Age. Cities buried, streets forgotten, warehouses ransacked and abandoned for the South. We love, we breathe, light footprints of our passing through the snow. What would we say? And how do we say it? Who would we talk to? And how could they answer? Buildings break beneath the ice. The bridges fall, and there are less of us each year. Like Arctic animals, we burrow through the wreckage of the city underground. And high above, where once the escalators climbed into the light, the tunnels terminate in breathing walls of ice. Here in the dark, within the stone walls of the ancient hospital, below the copper roofs and buried by the glaciers on all sides, here in blood and wailing, anchored in breathing and inflexible resolve, we have sent this letter to the next world. Archangel of the frozen colony, whose sign is fire, whose feet are locked in ice, we leave you more than this, than blowing snow or permafrost on a football field below. This is the breath of the last words spoken, bubbling up. The frozen evidence of love like nitrogen in glass. Our histories etched into the worlds. We will not live to know. And that was the winner of the Poetry for the End of the World by Ian Ferrier. The poem's called Letters from the Ice Age.
That was spooky.
Very spooky, right? And that was also, that song is one of my favorite spooky, kind of beautiful but too peaceful songs. La Petite Fille de la Mer, I don't know how to say it, Ben.
Feuille?
La Petite Fille de la Mer.
Yeah. De la Mer. The Little Girl of the Sea.
Yeah, and that's by Vangelis. And yeah, that's what we wanted to bring you today, and we'd love to hear from you now. About your ideas and your feelings about the apocalypse.
Yeah, when you think about it, is it something that makes you anxious? Is it something you don't put any credence into? I mean, I know for some people it's exciting, right? Otherwise, all of these huge blockbuster smash hit movies would have never done as well as they did.
People, right, why did they get $800 million for 2012? What is the draw here?
Right, I mean, people are paying for this sort of entertainment. I mean, Walking Dead is one of the biggest series on television. and people are drawn to it, even though the thought of placing yourself in that character's shoes, you know, can be
terrifying.
But I guess for some people, it's also very exciting. So what is that mentality? What is it about the human condition that makes us want to entertain these notions so much? Right? And it goes across culture. It goes across time. You know, it goes cuts across belief systems, whether religious or not, across various religions. There's a, I think, an impulse.
Yeah, a very base impulse.
To see where is the end, right? We know our history. We know there's a beginning and a middle, and we're still living in this history. And there may be this human impulse to say, hey, when does it all end? And it could be, too, that we're so sort of wrapped up in our own lives, in our own existence, that we don't want to consider a world after we're gone. Because at the end, we're all confronted with the reality of our own mortality. And that's something that, on an existential level, we all have to grapple with at one point or another. But maybe the popularity of this subject in pop culture, in media, in film, in television, in video games, maybe it's related to us not wanting to leave a world that's still going on, right? Like you said earlier, if we all go together, it's not such a big deal.
Right, the sadness of maybe even a young death, let's say someone who's in their early teens or 20s, the sadness there is the potential that lies ahead of that. And I think with the apocalypse, there's no more potential anymore. So,
that's the great equalizer.
It's not that big of a deal anymore. It's just everything's happening, the great equalizer.
Let's take a call, yeah.
Yeah, we've got Christina on the line. Christina?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Christina. Thanks for calling in today.
Yeah, no problem. I just wanted to say I don't really have any really great observations about, about why people are intrigued by it. I guess it's just the exciting thing. But I don't know. I don't think it's quite as pathological as some people make it out to be either.
Oh, I agree with you. I don't think it's pathological. But what about you? How do you feel?
I feel like it makes sense. I feel like it makes sense to be prepared for whatever. I don't think it makes sense to go out into the middle of nowhere and completely live your life based on that. But, I mean, so, like, think about history. I mean, empires fall. I mean, that's just kind of what happens.
Sure, that's the reality.
So, I mean, yeah. So I just think it's good for people to know how to be self-sufficient, and I wish that I was more like that. So that way, in case something happens, they're not putting all of their faith in a society that's actually becoming like a lot more violent as time goes on. So,
Christina, what did you know about the 2012, the Mayan theory before 2012? Were you aware of it? Had you heard of it?
Oh yeah, I was aware of that. I never really thought the world was going to end with that. But I don't know. I was very intrigued by it. I've heard the whole new beginning thing as well, but I haven't really seen any evidence of anything actually happening like that.
Yeah, for me, as someone who's more interested in the science of everything, I mean, when you watch documentaries like the mega tsunami, like, this is a real thing that could happen in the next 20 to 50 years, that this mountain in Southeast Asia would fall into the ocean, cause such a large wave that the entirety of the East Coast was destroyed. And, this is like something like I do have some extra food in my house for this. I would want to prepare myself. And I know what you're saying. But it's not as much of the world's going to be on fire tomorrow because, because of whatever reason.
Yeah, I actually hadn't heard about that. That's actually kind of scary.
Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have told you,
Christina, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking my call. You guys have a great day. You're doing a great job.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you so much.
212-757-555 5 is the number to
yeah,
call
it's four
here.
Four fives. So 212-757-5555.
We're talking about the notion of end times prophecies, apocalyptic ideas, end of the world as we know it, whether it's from a religious or a secular standpoint. How do you feel about it? Is it something that makes you anxious? Is it something that makes you excited? Is it something you don't put any stock in? There's a million theories that have propped up over the years. And as we mentioned earlier, the next prediction that's out there, that's online, says that the world's going to end next Wednesday. So I hope that we at least get to do our show before, if it is going to happen, I hope we at least to get on the air and do our show, because that would be a good way to go out. Let's take another call. Ray, you're calling. How you doing, Ray?
Okay. How are you guys doing?
Good. Thanks for call. How you doing today?
Good.
It's a good day to be alive.
Excuse me?
I said it's a good day to be alive.
Well, that's exactly it, and I think that's part of the point of you have these prophecies, and I've studied religions, different stuff, and it seems like a common theme through a lot of different religions, right? But it also, to me, it begs the question, what is the purpose of life? Am I going to live my life to be afraid that a disaster is going to happen to me? Is that the way I want to live?
That's not how I want to live.
I don't want to live like that.
Yeah,
I mean,
either.
It's like, then I'm not in the present then. It's like I'm always thinking about something over which I have no control, right, that might happen in the future. It seems like anything could happen. I can't say what could happen. You can't say what will happen.
We really have no clue about that, which is something that a lot of people, I think a lot of people try to spend time actually trying to control the future in a very real way by, you know, perhaps building a bunker or going to work at NASA and try to be part of that expedition that ends up going to Mars. And there are people that are like, what can I do to make sure that this doesn't happen to me?
Right. I'll give you a perfect example. This happened to me when I leave work. I get on the service road to get on the Grand Central Parkway, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going on the service road. I've done this for a long time, and one day this lady is coming straight towards me in my lane at about 40 miles an hour.
In the wrong lane, going the wrong way.
Oh, yeah, she's in my lane. She should be on the right side of the road. She's, you know, on her left. And this service road is weird because you can't turn, like, you can't swerve on this. You know, either you're going to turn into oncoming traffic, but there's no place to swerve to the right. And I'm beeping the horn. I'm screaming. I'm excited, you know. And it's like she's just, I don't know what she was doing, texting, what she was laughing. She must have been texting because she didn't see me. And then all of a sudden she looks up and she pulls over into her lane. And I thought that was it.
That was almost the end of your world.
Yeah. Sounds like a close one.
But listen, Ray, we're coming right up to the break, so I want to get an answer from you real quick. If I told you the world was going to end tomorrow, what would you do right now?
Or maybe a week. Give them a little extra time.
Or a week, yeah.
Well, I would spend the time with my family, of course.
Is there anything else that you've just been waiting to do?
Actually, I mean, I really love spending time with my grandkids and stuff, so
yeah,
that's what I would do.
Fantastic. Great answer. And thank you for calling in today, Ray, and talking to us about this.
Thanks a lot, guys. Love your show.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.
And we're coming up on our break here on The Positive Mind on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. And I'm Julian Joiello and Ben Starr in the studio with me talking about doomsday and the apocalypse and humanity and how we feel about all this.
How we feel and how we deal.
And we're going to bring you a little bit of music and be back with you in just a moment.
Stop. We'll be right back.
and that was the Pixies with Where Is My Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI New York. You're tuned into The Positive Mind. Today we're talking about the idea of the doomsday prophecies and how popular they've become in recent years. 2012 was probably the most prominent of these, but it sort of sparked a whole host of movies and books and television shows and even video games with an apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic theme. And I think it's part of this sort of postmodern malaise that people are experiencing right here in the 21st century. We're going to take another call. We have Dave on the line. Dave, thanks for calling in today.
Sure, glad to be here.
What's your take on the whole...
Yeah, hopefully I'm not too out of context. I joined your show about two calls ago, but my thought, you know, I read all sorts of religious texts in the Bible, and I know apocalypse means unveiling, and the whole idea is that this world kind of melts away, revealing like a more beautiful spiritual world that's always been there, but we don't really always have access to it until sometimes our old world breaks down. So it could be like, you know, for the gentleman that almost got killed and as the car was bearing down on him, or it could be more like a world war that affects everybody. But I think the tenor of it, it should be the personal transformation.
You know, I like that way of looking at it, Dave, because it's not a sort of a fatalistic outlook. It's more of a hopeful outlook, frankly. It's the idea of transformation rather than destruction, which I think is so often associated with this topic.
Yeah, absolutely. And even the word revelation, you know, the revelation of Jesus Christ, the last book of the Bible, that also is from the Greek apocalypsis, or it means unveiling. It means everything kind of falls away, revealing what is truly there and is, you know, permanent and can never pass away.
So, Dave, real quick, I'm going to ask you a similar question that I asked Ray, but I'm going to rephrase it. So let's say you had a month, right? Let's say you had a month to go where you knew that the whole world was going to end in October, say by Halloween. What would you do?
Okay. Oh, you know, lately I haven't done my life.
You there, Dave?
Be in the moment. I've been trying to be in the moment. I've been trying to do the right thing just for now, you know. And I think I would continue living that way. But then again, I have to be honest with myself. And saying what you said, I guess what you're saying, in a sense, is a reality check. Because am I really living in the moment? You know, like would I really live the same as I'm living now, as if I knew for a fact that the world is going to pass away? So maybe I will, when I get off the phone, I'll chew on that.
Well, and, I asked you if it was a month, because I asked Ray, what if it was tomorrow? And Ray said something that I think many of us would say, which is, oh, I'd spend time with my family, of course. And I think a lot of people would agree with that, but that's why I wanted to stretch it out. You know, what if you had a whole month? What if you had 6 weeks? You know, how would you change the way you go about things? How would you know what I mean by that? Like, instead of...
Yeah, I mean, so there's this... I get, like I said, philosophical. I try to be practical with it, but there's this Quaker idea about the inner light, and that it, you know, it is the conscience, whatever you want to call it, the little voice that all of us has inside, that I think, I don't know, we've all heard it once in a while. It kind of tells us, do the right thing, and I think... So I feel, and this is my belief system at this moment, that fact exists, and that is connected with everything else that's happening everywhere. And so if I could get in touch with that, I mean, we're all in touch, I think, as much as we are. So if I can continue to be in touch to the extent I am and continue to get closer and closer and closer, then I'll be totally fine, because that voice knows when the world's ending. And if it's a month, it knows that, and it knows what I should be doing in order to, I don't know, contribute to the grand plan that's catapulting us forward.
Well, Dave, thanks so much for the call, and thanks for listening. I really appreciate your comments today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. God bless. Take care.
212-757-5555 is the number to call. Once again, that's 212-757-5555. We're talking about the trend in pop culture that's made these apocalyptic themes and end times themes so popular. And I'm wondering how you feel about it. Do you think it's silly? Do you think it's scary? Do you think it's exciting? We're going to take another call. Caller, you're on the line. This is the Positive
Hello?
Mind. Yes. Hi, who's this?
Dan.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, so what's your view on the notion of end times and all these movies and TV shows that we've seen that have become so successful?
Well, first, I think it'd be good to differentiate between the what I've heard is like the fictitious end of the world versus more like historical, pragmatic end of the world. Like, you know, World War II and the Black Plague in the 14th century, the fall of Rome, those are historic accounts where I feel that people of those times really genuinely did feel like, or the Cold War, people generally felt like the world was ending versus, you know, 2012 and like, you know, once every 10 to 20 years, somebody spouting that Revelations is going to come true and we need to get ready.
So you're talking more about the secular vision that we mentioned earlier versus the religious vision.
Yes. I also think an important thing to note, though, is that there are people who definitely are preparing for, you know, the end, the quote-unquote end of the world via environmental reasons or whatnot.
Absolutely. You know, it's become a massive industry. It's become a multi-million dollar industry marketing all kinds of products for people who want to be ready.
Right. Something else, though, that I think is also important to say, though, is that for every day that this doomsday does not happen, the same methods and modes of control and cultures and systems will still be in place. You know, for every day that the doomsday does not happen, it's just going to be like yesterday, where nothing has effectively changed.
So you mean we'll still be pumping tons of greenhouse gases into the air, and we'll still be, you know, wasteful in our habits, and we won't sort of change our idea of how to live better?
Right. I mean, until the cultural shock happens, like I heard on NPR that Volkswagen is having a huge scandal because of diesel emissions and how that's seriously affecting their, you know, German economy. How it isn't until very decisive foundation-rocking events happen, either economically, socially, or environmentally, that present-day cultural progress will change, I think.
Well, Dan, I think it's really interesting that you bring that up, because one thing that I was thinking about, looking at the 2012 phenomenon, and a lot of this sort of, like we mentioned, the industry of preppers, right, and the industry of being prepared, a lot of this sparked up in the years leading up to 2012, in the 4 or 5 years leading up to it. Now, a lot of us remember 2008, 2009 were very, very tough economic times, right? We had a major correction on the stock market, major problems in the mortgage industry, and people were feeling that worldwide, and that coincided with this culture of being prepared. Maybe because we felt so unprepared for the shock that we had economically, that people said, going forward, I'm going to be ready this time.
Right. I spoke to a friend of mine's grandfather once, who was of that like Great Depression era. And when I spoke to him about, you know, 2008, the financial crisis, what happens if there is a serious recession or something like that? And he said, you know, you kids, you couldn't handle what we had to go through in 1929. Like, the emotion and the psychology that goes with this idea of doomsday is a world that, for the most part, middle class, working people who haven't had that experience of what it's like to live with such few resources might not even necessarily have the mental fortitude to go through with. People who espouse the idea of this doomsday scenario.
Yeah, that's a great point, Dan, and I've certainly known people from that generation, too, who experienced that, and they all sounded very similar to your friend's grandfather. Well, Dan, thank you so much for the call, and I appreciate that you tuned in today. And thanks for, you know, your contribution today. It's good stuff. And I want to open up the phone lines as we're winding down the show. We have time for a couple more calls. The number here is 212-757-5555. That's 212-757-5555. You know, the the guys out there in Syria and Iraq, this new group ISIS, right, that we hear so much about, a huge part of their sort of ideology and manifesto is based around apocalyptic and bringing about end times. So it's interesting. We have another caller on the air. You're on WBAI. Hi, caller.
Hello, is that me?
Yeah, who's this?
Hi, it's Gino, Ben.
Hey, Gino, how you doing?
All right, I just want to say, first of all, got Armand on my prayer list, so I'm still saying hello to him every day, and I'm sure he's sending back his love from the ethers.
I'm sure you're right.
Can't get rid of water. I'm sure we're not going to get rid of Armand.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, what does this topic bring up for me? Well, for one thing, I don't know, last number of years, I keep thinking, there's 27,000 children, is that the apocalypse for them today? Because they won't be alive at the end of the day. And people still haven't connected, for the most part, how what we eat is connected to such destruction of feeding the animals too much. 16 pounds of soybean, you get 1 pound of meat. Many people know this. And the animals that are suffering unnecessarily, and we can't even film them anymore, it would be a crime. Chopping down the trees, the water, diminishing clean water.
So you look at it from an environmental standpoint.
Well, ultimately for me, I can't disconnect things anymore. For me, it's like that Jewish saying, the Lord our God is one. Everything is connected. So I see it ultimately the problem is a spiritual one. And then it manifests through whatever political, economic, you know, psychological, health-wise, environmentally. I can't disconnect anymore. I think as I get older, I see it more and more as it's true. It's all connected. So, and that previous caller was very right on about the positive interpretation of apocalypse or revelation of the mystery.
Right, the awakening. You reminded me of that too.
Yeah, it's beautiful because in truth, we do focus mostly on the negative. Most of us are geared, trained to think that way because it's either love or fear. And most of us, I think, are basically immersed in fear. And of course, the media plays upon it because then we could get more militarized, whether it be with the police or the military or whatnot. And
well, I think, it's not necessarily people's fault. It's just easier, I think. People slip into that survival mode, and that's all fear really is, right? It's this instinct of self-preservation.
Yeah, but it's a small self, and even on the small self, it diminishes it in terms of fear itself. Could you get bad news, it could kill somebody. So ultimately, we want more of the truth to get us free from all these things. So what I find for myself when I hear all these things, or the hundreds of thousands of gallons of radioactive water still pouring into the ocean every day, or the fish stock diminishing and the life, I hear all these things, it's more an impetus for me as a reminder to, basically do my meditations, get my tune up, from whatever you want to call the higher power, the superconscious God, the Atman, the authentic self. Words, after a while, they're so insufficient, but we need them to guide us until we ultimately have those great experiences within our conscious, subconscious, superconscious, unified. And so I feel that taking care of the body temple, doing the meditation, and doing good deeds, and don't give in to the fear. And whatever happens, happens. If the earth opens up in front of me, I have a choice. Get a heart attack or help somebody about to fall in the hole.
So it's being a spiritual warrior. Is that what you're saying? You got to be spiritually strong to withstand any kind of...
This is a challenge to all of us to work, because application without, application on the knowledge that we hear from folks like you guys doing a great job, by the way. Though I might want to play that song, but I think he would encourage you, knowing that everybody's got their own contributions to make.
It's funny you said that. I know Armand definitely would not be playing the Pixies, but Julian and I looked at each other.
I'm glad you guys did.
And we felt that it fit.
It did indeed. And keep it contemporary, keep the old with the new, and that's the way to go. So ultimately, folks, do your meditations, watch out for the cults. It's just simply doing asana with your lungs, do deep breathing, do it beyond 10, 15, 20 minutes. For me, it takes me 20 minutes to relax my 600 muscles. Get that deep breath from your solar system, solar plexus, hold an affirmation, focus. There's an expression, when the tide of consciousness is withdrawn from the five senses and you accentuate it on your sixth sense, whatever you want to call that higher self, That's meditation. The tide goes in. Then you come out. You don't stay to yourself. You come out and you bring that light and you hug somebody. You give a smile. You feed the cats down the block. You know, you do what you
know,
can to let people know. Eat better. Don't die young. It's all connected. We're all responsible. We all hand in our report cards one day if you believe that. If you don't, well, it'll make you feel good anyway just to be helping somebody.
Thank you,
but
Gino.
Anyway,
hey,
thank
listen.
You guys. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Gino. You're amazing, and I appreciate that. And you made me smile, so I thank you for the call. We're going to take a couple more calls before the show wraps up. But big thanks to Gino. Put a smile on my face with that. Feed the cats down the block. Amazing. 212-757-5555 is the number to call. We have time to take a couple more phone calls, maybe one, maybe two, depending. I do want to get a couple in as quickly as possible. We got a caller on the line right now. You're on WBAI. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
Good. Who's this?
My name is Ed, calling from Queens.
Aaron?
Ed.
Ed, how you doing, Ed?
I'm all right. You were talking about the fascination with apocalypse and the end of the world coming. Well, I believe that, you know, speaking to people, I believe that nobody wants to, everybody would like to believe that the end is going to be in their time.
Exactly.
That, everything's going to end in their own personal history, whether it's a narcissistic feeling or just a fascination fascination with it, or the unavailability to deal with death.
Because we all want to feel special, right? So we want to feel like if it's going to happen, at least it's going to happen while I'm around, right?
Yeah, well, you know, if I'm going to go, then everybody's going to go.
Exactly.
I'm going to take all y'all with me. That goes back to the lack of people wanting to deal with death. I mean, when I was young, I had a lot of death in my family. And when I was young, I sort of like around 13, 14, dealt with had a revelation. Uncle died that was very close to me. And when it hit you, the inevitability of it, and then you deal with it to a certain extent, it doesn't become that big of a deal, because none of these shows or none of these video games or these shows or this cult of apocalyptics, which also happened during the first century. There was a cult of apocalyptic people that believed that the world was going to come to an end in their time. It doesn't really do it for me. I mean, it also deals with the savageness of this country and man's inhumanity to man, the popularity of all these shows, you know, to shoot a corpse in the head. Or you got to take it out, hit it with a bat or something like that. I really think it's a little depraved.
Look, I agree with you. It's a reflection on our culture and our values, and it's what, you know, people vote with their dollars as well, right? And in the system we're in, we all vote with our dollars on what we want. And a lot of people have voted with a lot of dollars for the sort of content that you've described, for better or for worse.
Well, I think a lot of people are. I think there's a general lack, in, for want of a better word, intelligence within the society on a whole. I think years ago, not to say that the good old days, but I remember when I was younger, it took more of an intellectual stimulus to turn you on, you know, at least people of my age group and people that I grew up around from just a personal level. Some of these shows are just simplistic, you know. I mean, what, you're running around the country shooting zombies in the head, trying not to get eaten. I mean, it's not entertaining. It doesn't have any dramatic value. It's just the sheerness of watching.
It has a lot of shock value, I think.
After a while, it gets old.
It's the shock value, you know. And Ed, I want to thank you for calling in, and thank you certainly for tuning in. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up towards the end of the show, I want to thank all of our callers who called in today as we discussed pretty interesting, pretty touchy at times topic, really, is this proliferation that we've seen in pop culture and in mass media of the notion of end times and doomsday. So, you know, it's been a great time hearing all your takes on it. Thank you to all our callers today. To those of you who are still calling in and who called over the break and could not get in, I encourage you to keep calling tomorrow. Tune in. We'll be back here same time, same place. And we have a special guest to introduce you to tomorrow. It's going to be Winifred Rule. And she is with the Society for the Scientific Study of Psychopathy. And so we'll have Winfred Rule along with Dr. Craig Newman, and they're some of the great experts right now in psychopathy research. And we're going to be talking about an aspect of psychopathy that people don't usually talk about that much, because that's what we like to do. We like to bring you the other side of issues here. We like to bring you the flip side, the unconsidered vantage point, if you will. And that's going to be tomorrow at 1 right here on 99.5 FM on your dial. Again, that's Winfred Rule and Dr. Craig Newman. They're both from the Society for the Scientific Study of Psychopathy. And we'll be talking to them about the female psychopath, because most of the time we hear about psychopaths as men. And they've done a lot of research on the other side of that. So very interested to talk to them and hear what they have to tell us about. And we'll be taking your calls tomorrow. So please give us a ring tomorrow. You'll be able to ask all kinds of questions on psychopaths, psychopathy. And for now, hope you have a wonderful rest of your afternoon. And I hope the world doesn't end by the time we come on tomorrow. But I have a feeling we'll still be here. So thanks again for tuning in, as always. We do appreciate it. You can look us up on thepositivemind.com. Send us an email at positivemind@wbai.org. You can find us on the iTunes Store. Download a free podcast. If you can't tune in live, you can always subscribe. It's free, and it'll download automatically to your iTunes library. So if you ever need to hear an episode that you missed, you can get that on iTunes for free. And once again, our email, positivemind@wbai.org. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll be back with you tomorrow, as I mentioned, 1 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 FM.